I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE. Ahead of tomorrow's so-called elections in the United States of America, the USA arming the genocide in Gaza, the proxy war in Western Europe, and countless organizations subverting democracy all around the global south is itself ruled by elites presiding over executions disproportionately affecting people of color, mass censorship via an oligarch-controlled media system, and catastrophic levels of poverty. 43,000 were shot dead in the USA last year. 40 million cannot eat tonight without federal food aid programs. With less than 5% of the world's population, it accounts for 25% of those globally incarcerated. Genocide Joe Holocaust Harris's USA remains the only UN member state that has not ratified the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women and the Convention on the Civil Rights of the Child. In April 2023, the US Senate rejected a constitutional amendment to guarantee gender equality. According to NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden, US authorities mass surveil all forms of communication between U.S. citizens. According to one Ipsos poll, 76% of Americans believe the country is headed in the wrong direction. As trillions from public money are used to wage war abroad, the gap between rich and poor in the USA has now reached its worst level since the Great Depression of 1929. Yet if you believe the fake news media in the USA and its vassal NATO states, you'd think tomorrow's election was being interfered with by Russia and China. Joining me now from Washington, D.C. is James Bamford, a multi-award-winning journalist, Emmy-nominated filmmaker, and best-selling author of The Puzzle Palace, The Shadow Factory, and Body of Secrets, and most recently, Spy Fail, Foreign Spies, Moles, Saboteurs, and the Collapse of America's Counterintelligence. James, thanks for getting on the show ahead of our coverage of the U.S. elections tomorrow. We know Starmer's Britain has tried to interfere with the outcome of tomorrow's U.S. elections. People can watch our coverage of Matt Taibbi and Paul Thacker's expose on Saturday's show on Rumble. But given the biggest spy story, biggest story in the world is still the UK-US-EU armed genocide in Gaza, what power does Israel wield in tomorrow's elections in the USA?
Well, it's always wielded enormous power. Just the fact that the United States is basically a co-belligerent in a genocide. We're supplying the weapons, they drop them, but we build them and send them and pay for them. So we're as guilty as the Israelis are for taking part in the genocide. And that happens because we have a constituency that is very powerful and very wealthy and supports the whatever we do in Israel.
But how will they influence the elections? Remind us, actually, I have an excerpt here from Spy Fail, Foreign Spies, Moles, Saboteurs, and the Collapse of America's Counterintelligence. You talk about a meeting between John Kerry and Netanyahu in Rome. As usual, your beautiful prose style sets the scene of a popular seafood restaurant in Piazza de Ricci, a block from Rome's Tiber River. That was for the 2016 election. Remind us how they interfered with that one.
Yeah, I wrote a considerable amount about that, and the way I wrote about it was by getting Freedom of Information Act documents from the FBI and other agencies. And what they show is that the Israelis, throughout the summer of 2016, had been directly interfering with the election by trying to get Donald Trump to agree to a number of things that Netanyahu wanted. And in order to get that, the Israelis were basically offering intelligence to the Trump campaign. And again, a lot of this came from documents that were released by the FBI, documents that were transcripts of conversations between the Israeli agent and Roger Stone, who was very close to Trump during the campaign. So it was a direct connection between the Israeli intelligence and Netanyahu personally and Donald Trump.
Roger Stone, a proven liar about Julian Assange. Assange, who's been on this show as regards his, when he took asylum in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. But then you'd think then, with the power of Netanyahu to subvert democracy in the United States, and given the multi-billion dollars amounts every week, it seems, given by Blinken, Biden, Harris, Sullivan, Austin, Burns to Netanyahu, Kamala Harris, Holocaust Harris, would be in with a chance. But you think Miriam Adelson's money for Trump will hold more sway to get Trump elected as far as foreign interference goes tomorrow?
Well, her husband played a great deal of played a big role in getting Trump elected in, you know, the previous election. So Miriam has his fortune, and she's using it again to help Trump. So it helped before. I'm sure it'll help again. It's huge amounts of money. You're talking, I think, close to $100 million or something. I mean, I don't know how democracy is judged as a workable idea if somebody can spend $100 million to get somebody elected while other people have nothing except a single vote.
Yeah, but there's that part of it, the oligarch class element of it, but then there's the foreign agent element of it. It's not legal. Oh, you're not allowed to do that in the United States, surely.
No, I mean, Miriam Adelson has dual citizenship, but obviously she's more connected to Israel than she is to the United States. Her husband said that he only has one issue, and that issue is Israel. It isn't the United States, it's Israel. So that's why his money has always been enormously desired by basically every Republican politician in Washington. They go to him for millions of dollars, and that's how it works. That's one of the reasons why we're aiding in this genocide is money from pro-Israeli and a lot of very wealthy people who contribute to the, basically, to Biden's campaign to get him elected. Biden has basically said that he's a Zionist, and he's taken more money from the pro-Israeli lobby than any other politician in the United States. So that's where it stands right now, and why you haven't heard very much from Kamala Harris in terms of what her views are on the genocide.
But they haven't done enough to please Netanyahu to win. I mean, Israel, we can't say Israel is controlling the result tomorrow, because both sides support Israel in any case.
Right, but you would think that the Biden administration and Harris, along with Biden, would, you know, they have these rules that they keep saying that they want the world to follow, and then they don't follow them themselves, and they expect everybody else to agree with them and vote for them. So I'm totally at a loss why anybody would vote for the Harris campaign, since she has never come out and condemned the genocide.
And yet, despite freedom of information legislation, we'll never really know the full influence, because people have in the past praised RFK Jr. and Tulsi Gabbard, for instance, for their principled stance against foreign wars, endless wars around the world. And yet both of them support the genocide and perhaps will be in a Trump cabinet.
Yeah, there was a time when the Kennedy first came out, it sounded like he was going to be different and take some different actions as opposed to completely going along with everything that Netanyahu wanted. And for maybe the first 2 weeks, he had that attitude, and then all of a sudden it was like he was taken to the backyard and spanked, and all of a sudden he completely turned and became a complete advocate of Netanyahu and the war. And that's simply the way it always works in the United States. I've written enormous amounts about how the system works, and it just never changes.
Or psychologically impacted about the fact that it was a Palestinian that killed his dad. Who knows? We don't know Israel's impact on those two.
Well, we don't know it because they very seldom speak about it. It's very difficult to write about Israel in the United States. Very difficult for journalists to actually write critically about Israel. I've been doing it all my life, ever since I began writing, and I've never had so much pushback as whenever I write about Israel.
What happened to you? What happened to you when, because, you know, you've won awards, you're a best-selling writer, and then you start talking about Israeli interference in American politics?
I get pushed back by editors. I get pushed back by the public. I get pushed back by a lot of people who think that you shouldn't be writing critically about Israel. I've been there numerous times. I've been shot at by the settlers. One of the settlers shot at me with a Uzi machine gun. I'm fairly familiar with what goes on over there, but writing about it is a very difficult topic. When I wrote the Spy Fail, I wrote a great deal about Israel, critically about Israel. And I was getting enormous pushback from a number of people. 9 months later, it sort of preceded what happened 9 months later, which was the genocide. So I was sort of writing about it before it happened, but it's much more easy to write about it today than it would have been 9 months before it happened when my book came out.
Yeah, I mean, the bravery of Jewish activists on campuses in the United States, arguably, has shown that they can't accuse everyone of being anti-Semitic anymore. Actually, you've written about how they've infiltrated campuses, student demonstrations. I don't know whether they've successfully managed to suppress them. At one point, we were thinking there's going to be a Kent State situation. Tell me just a bit about how Zionist groups are used to infiltrate the campuses of the United States.
Well, Israel has a very strong presence on campuses, but very covert, largely. There's a group called Israel On Campus Coalition in Washington. It gets a lot of its money from Israel. It gets its computer equipment from Israel. And its main function is to get a sense of what's going on in all the campuses. And it does that by using people who report confidentially to the group. It's a very large, extensive group. I wrote about a lot about it in my recent book. And what they do is they collect intelligence on what's going on in the different campuses and then pass it on to Israel. And then Israel passes information on to them in terms of what to do. So you have a group in the United States right here in Washington, about half a mile from where I live, and they have enormous control over what goes on campuses. And it's directly, not only directly connected, but it gets a lot of its funding from the people, same people who support all the AIPAC and all these other groups.
James Bamford, I'll stop you there. More from the multi-award-winning journalist and best-selling author of The Puzzle Palace, The Shadow Factory and Body of Secrets after this break.
If you think about Russia, what does your mind picture? What landscapes open up before your eyes? What wonders can you imagine? Peter Scott starts the journey. Are you ready to come along?
Hello and welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns. Here we discuss some real news.
Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with James Bamford, the multi-award-winning journalist and best-selling author of The Puzzle Palace and Body of Secrets, and more recently, Spy Fail, Foreign Spies, Moles, Saboteurs, and the Collapse of America's Counterintelligence. James, we must remember, tomorrow is election day, so-called election day in the United States. Any concrete evidence this time of Israeli interference? We showed on Saturday's show about British interference. I mean, it took decades for the New York Times to confirm Israel's role in electing Reagan apparently. Then no one believed it, that the hostage release by Iran was delayed to destroy Carter's attempt at trying to be re-elected as president. Do we know Israel is hard at work right now trying to corrupt democracy in the United States tomorrow?
Well, it's hard to say. The problem is it's so difficult trying to write about what Israel is doing in the United States. The only way I was able to write about it before, during the 2016 election, where they interfered with the Trump election, I mean, interfering is an understatement, was by getting documents released by the under the Freedom of Information Act from the FBI that showed the actual contacts between the Israeli agent and the Trump campaign. But what you see happening was that nobody was ever arrested for that. There was never any follow-up by the American press, major media. They focused entirely on Russiagate, which turned out to be nothing, and completely turned a blind eye to the Israeli interference. So it's almost impossible to determine what they're doing unless you actually get somebody on the inside telling you about it.
So because of how fluid the violence is, there have been assassination attempts on Trump. By the time this interview is being broadcast, who knows what else will have been going on by the military-industrial complex to prevent a Trump administration, or by the Israelis to prevent Harris. Who knows? But you've written about Unit 8200. That's Israeli SIGINT national units. I mean, there have been claims that Lebanese resistance have bombed them, actually, in the past few days. How it uses the National Security Agency, which, of course, Edward Snowden showed was used routinely to surveil, mass surveillance. Snowden, of course, now in Moscow after seeking asylum. I mean, how is Israeli intelligence embedded within the firmament of U.S. intelligence, and could it be used to manipulate tomorrow's elections?
Well, the Unit 8200 is extremely powerful. It's about the same as the NSA, the National Security Agency. I've done three books on NSA, so I'm fairly familiar with that. And I was, I think, the first person to interview Ed Snowden in Moscow for Wired magazine. And when I talked to him, he was adamant that there was a great deal of cooperation between the United States and Israel, Unit 8200. The relationship between NSA and Unit 8200 is the closest relationship, foreign relationship, that NSA has. And the NSA has a liaison officer embedded with Unit 8200, and Unit 8200 has a liaison officer embedded right at Fort Meade, where NSA is headquartered. So there's enormous cooperation. And what the documents that came from Snowden showed was that the Israelis were pressing NSA to get actual location, geolocation of people that they were attempting to assassinate. The liaison officer, NSA liaison officer, pushed back, saying that under U.S. law, we're not allowed to give you information that will allow you to assassinate somebody. And then another document came back saying that the Israeli 8200 had worked out some kind of a cooperative agreement with the NSA to sort of overcome that problem. In other words, basically, NSA gave them the information they needed to help with the assassinations, and that probably is still going on today with the assassinations that have been taking place this past summer.
Yeah, we don't mean the Trump. I do want to return to the election, but we don't mean the Trump assassinations, because presumably Israel doesn't want to kill Trump with his close alliance with Netanyahu. But then what you were saying just there, presumably implying the assassinations against Saad Nasrallah, head of Lebanese resistance, and chief Palestinian negotiator Sinwar, Antony Blinken, or Butcher Blinken, as some might say, said the former West exec consultant, Secretary of State, said this is something we were not aware of or involved in. It's very hard to speculate on Haniyeh, referring to the other Palestinian negotiator who was murdered by the Israelis. What's your hunch? I mean, obviously, we don't have any proof, but that the Biden-Harris administration was involved in the assassinations of the negotiator that they were crowing about at the State Department as regards this ceasefire plan.
Well, as I said, they helped him before in the assassination attempts at, and actual complete assassinations that they did in the Middle East during earlier wars. So with liaison and giving geolocation information. So, I mean, if they're giving them the bombs to drop on innocent civilians in refugee camps and hospitals and schools, it's not a great leap to give them the detailed information on geolocation, on where their targets are that they want to assassinate in Lebanon or Yemen or Iran or wherever. So there's no doubt in my mind that the U.S. is helping the Israelis in every way it can. I don't think there's any pullback whatsoever.
All the while impersonating an honest broker and Holocaust Harris trying to impress her base with the fact that somehow they're different to Trump on that issue.
Well, I don't think they may be slightly different, but the point is that the Harris campaign has had enormous opportunity to come out and show that they have some, even a slight degree of difference from the Biden administration and or the Biden presidency in terms of attitudes towards the genocide, and they completely refused. They refused to even have a speaker at the convention. So there is no indication that if Harris gets elected president, that there will be any change whatsoever in the administration's attitude towards Israel and towards the war and the genocide. The Democrats have never pushed back on this. There has never been an issue with regard to Senate or people running for the Senate or the House. So it just comes as standard operating procedure that Israel gets what it wants, and either administration, whoever gets elected, will give them whatever it is that they do want.
Albeit then the only chance for change is Trump. But then if there is massive lawfare between November and January as fights break out in different states over electoral college versus popular vote and who knows what else the Harris team has up its sleeve, certainly swing state polling showing a Trump victory, which way would Israel support? Because Israel has lawyers on both sides, and Israel has intelligence assets advising both Democrats and Republicans. Who do they want more? Is that what it'll come down to?
Well, I think they definitely want Trump more than they want Harris. Harris is going along with Biden's policy right now. Once she's elected and once she takes office in January 20th of next year, who knows, you know, she's an unknown quantity. She may veer to the left and go along with the progressives on Israel. There's no chance that Trump will do that. Trump, as I've been explaining earlier, went along completely with the Israeli program when the secret agent came.
But of course, he says he's different now, and he made the wrong choices with John Bolton and so on. Isn't he more unpredictable in that sense?
Well, he is unpredictable in, you know, in a number of senses, actually. But you know, you could say that he would be against more heavily involvement with the Israelis for several reasons. One of them, he has a complete dislike for Netanyahu. I mean, he's never hid his dislike for Netanyahu as a person. He's complained about him numerous times. And second of all, Trump is the guy that comes out saying that we don't want to spend any more money on wars overseas or Middle East wars. And this is about as big a Middle East war as you can get. So you have those two ideas that he would not want to help Netanyahu because he dislikes Netanyahu and not want to get heavily involved in the any more involved or maybe pull back from Israel based on his earlier pronouncements that he's against any more wars and expanding wars in the Middle East. So So you have those two unknown quantities, whoever gets elected.
Albeit that, his son-in-law slept in Netanyahu's bed, as far as I understand. And but most of the American electorate, while the Muslim voters and Arab Americans obviously won't be voting for Harris, you've actually written about the way they have managed to conceal things in your legacy media outputs, but the dreadful killing of Hind Rajab you've written about with a US 120-millimeter artillery shell. Having said all of that, the war in Western Europe, Trump has been relatively clear about ending, because this is a proxy war that is subsidized to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars. I don't know, government accounting office hide all the figures. Whoever wins will make a big difference as regards Western Europe in ending that war.
Well, I think especially Trump. Yeah, Trump, I don't think, has any desire to continue the war in Ukraine. The war is going terribly for Ukraine. Now you've got and it just keeps on expanding and going in strange directions. I mean, at one point you have the Ukrainian military taking over a portion of the Kursk region of Russia. And now you have the North Koreans coming in to push the Ukrainians out of the Kursk area.
Albeit that's been denied, that story, as a piece of propaganda. Just coming to an end now, if Trump uses Israeli help, he gets in and so on, a DNC in opposition, a Democrat opposition, do you think they'll at last be able to reflect on their support for genocide in opposition if Trump wins tomorrow?
Yeah, I think if Trump wins, then I think the at least some of the blame will go on the fact that the Biden administration, Biden-Harris administration, had given too much support for Israel and lost votes in Michigan, for example. People just would not vote for either party or even vote for Trump instead. I think there will be a time when everybody will start thinking maybe we went the wrong way, maybe we should have been more anti-genocide. So hopefully if that happens, that will be a reflection. The problem is that you just don't know which way Trump will go if he wins, whether he's going to pound his chest and say we're going to win this for Israel, or do the opposite and say we're getting out of this war.
James Bamford, thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those bereaved by UK-US-EU armed genocide. We'll be back with a brand new episode on Saturday. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.